Mr. Shaw, Reel 5. Now, what were you actually doing at Devonport when you, you know, the resolution when you joined her?
Well, we just sort of had to do the auxiliary watch keeping, and we did that until the ship started to move.
Now, the ship was refitting, wasn't
the
it?
The ship was finishing off a reef. It nearly finished.
Do you know what was happening? How big a reef it was?
No, I don't, to be quite honest, I don't know. I don't really know how long it had been there either before we joined. But anyway, I don't think we were there all that long. I'm just trying to puzzle it out. A couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. But the ship had been there longer, obviously, you see. And then I think that's when we came round to Sheerness. And then they used to run a boat called the Nimble. It was one of the auxiliary boats, well-known names around Chatham area. And that used to take the Liberty men ashore. We couldn't get into Chatham Yard. We had to anchor right out, you see, opposite Sheerness. So the people who wanted to go ashore in Chatham would go on this Nimble, an auxiliary, RFA, Royal Fleet. But there were one or two people who lived in or around Sheerness, and of course they could just go the short trips. And this is what happened for a while. And people who lived in Chatham, for instance, and they were married, and there were weekends, well, fair enough. They got a weekend in turn, alternate. You know, they didn't get a weekend every week. But it was while we were there that the people who were on leave were recalled from leave. This is when the crisis started. I think that was was that about the September before, or the August, or something?
About September, I think, yeah, I think Munich crisis.
I can't remember exactly, but I think it was there. And that's then was when I think we went up to Invergordon and Scapa. It may have been Scapa first and back to Invergordon. But anyway, ran that area. And we dawdled around a bit, doing exercises and so forth and so on. We had a few games of football while we were up there, especially at Scapa Flow.
I'll come to that. Were you much aware of the Munich crisis? I mean, did you think you might be going to war? How did you feel about it?
Oh, well, I think the majority of people thought there was a 50-50 chance, put it that way. But we didn't, like everything else, we didn't get a lot of information, as you know. But we probably thought there was a 50-50 chance. And then, if I remember rightly, it seemed to die down, didn't it? After a while, it seemed to, and everybody sort of relaxed a bit. I'm just trying to think of, we came into Portsmouth on...
Now, what about the football? Well, going back to that,
the first team was quite a reasonable team, but it was mainly all Marines or seamen, people who had lots of exercise, etc., etc., etc. Hardly anybody in the engine room branch, apart from, well, I played to start with, but I didn't last the place because before I left the ship after 2 years, someone else had replaced me anyway, because I wasn't doing any. I was doing going down the boiler room, wasn't doing any. But there was a young stoker on there, and his name was Lightning. And I used to think I could play football until I saw him. He was really out of this world. Well, I'll give you an example. When the war started, one of the first things we did before we...
Hang on, no, you're moving on to
some
more.
Too fast. Yeah. I'm going to tell you about this. All right, it doesn't matter. And I'll tell you later on about this Stoker Lightning. Yeah.
So you were, at the time, you were still playing football, but later on... Now, what was your next move? You say you went to Portsmouth.
That's right. I'm trying to think. We were Portsmouth round about... it must have been... beginning of 39. That's right, just before, you know, the year the war started. But that the first, we were there definitely on the first over New Year, and I'll tell you why I remember that distinctly, because first of all, they had a ship's dance at the Empress Ballrooms in Portsmouth.
Well, tell me about that. What do you remember of that?
Well, I didn't dance much at the time. I went, and I might have the odd, but I wasn't a real keen dancer at all. And but I used to like the music, etc., etc. And
now, what was it? What was the dance like? I mean, how was it organised, and what was it like?
A good band, you know, the big band type, a really good band, and there were hundreds of people there, and lots of girls, obviously. And I can't remember the name of the dance band, but they used to hold regular dances at this hall in Portsmouth, the Empress Ballroom. My wife knows a bit about it, but anyway, the Empress Ballroom. And I went to that on, I can't remember whether it was a New Year's Eve one. It could have been, you know, but anyway, it was for ship's dance mainly.
And was there much, was there a lot of drinking going on?
Well, people were drinking, and as a matter of fact, it was the one occasion when I overdid it, because I had a bet on with one of my chums who was in the same class as me in the Fiskard, and who happened to be joined the Resolution, and he's still alive now, actually, he's in Portsmouth. And there was a song out at the time that Bing Crosby had sung, Small Fry, you may have heard it, anyway, it doesn't. And I had a bet on with him, half a crown, which was a lot of money in those days, that I would get up and sing this at the dance. And of course I didn't have the nerve, you see. So I was drinking, I thought, the bit of the Dutch courage, and I was drinking whiskey, which I didn't like anyway. And in the end, right towards the end, practically the end of the dance, they struck up. I knew that they were going to play Small Fry. So I staggered up onto the stage and tried to talk the person who was normally going to sing it to let me sing it. And he didn't want to do it to start with, but he must have realised I wasn't aggressive or anything. He must have realised I was just a bit under the weather, so he let me do it. And I sang it. Not, I wouldn't say I sang it very well. So I won the half crown, but unfortunately, after that, I was as sick as a dog. And at the time, I wasn't married at the time, and my mother was staying with my mother in Gosport. And I wasn't fit enough to go home, but luckily for me, another one of my shipmates took me round to his house, so I slept it off overnight there, and then went home. Well, I went back on board the next morning and then went home afterwards. So that's an incident. But the other incident, the reason I know that it was New Year's Day mainly is because just as I was about to go ashore with one of my friends, and this must have been about, well, afterwards must have been 6 o'clockish or something, I forget now anyway. And they announced over the radio that a record crowd for any league match in Britain ever. And I knew they were going to say it was the Rangers and Celtic match. And I was halfway up the ladder and I came down again. And it was 180, I can almost remember the exact figure, 118,000 and something. This was at a league match. You know, well, not an ordinary. So it was New Year's Day. We're over, and we stayed in Portsmouth, I don't know, a couple of weeks, I think. I don't know what was being done, but we stayed there 2 or 3 weeks.
How used, you'd been aboard 4 or 5 months, 6 months then. How were you settling in aboard the Resolution?
Oh, we all settled in pretty easily.
Would you say it was a happy ship, you know, or a...
Well, it's difficult to know. We seem to be... we all seem to be all right. We expected to be... we had a lot of discipline in those days, as you can imagine, but we were used to it, you know what I mean? I don't think there was, as far as I know, there was no such thing as bullying or anything like that. You know, you'd get the senior ratings, naturally, they wouldn't ask you to do something, you were ordered to do something, but you expected that in any case. But well, I don't think there were a few minor incidents, but nothing that I know of. Anyway, I mean, I'm only talking about our branch, really, but I didn't hear of anything amongst the other branches either. But that's not to say there wasn't, but I didn't know anything about it.
Now, what happened next? You were in Port.
Right, so now, where did we go to from Portsmouth? Let me get this right. We must have gone. I think we went back to Sheerness. Oh no! Wait a minute. Portsmouth. That's right. It was the cruise when we went. What they call the what was the naval name for it? I'll get it in a minute. Anyway, it's when the Home Fleet and the Mediterranean Fleet joined forces round about Gibraltar and did exercises. The spring cruise, I think they called it. It wasn't a cruise, and we all did exercise. And that's the first time, if you remember rightly, when I told you I saw the hood steaming.
Well, no, tell us on tape, because that was off the tape.
Yeah, well, we were there with several other battleships. I can't remember the names of them all now, but several of the other R-class, you know, like the Moyloke, Ramillies, and all this business. The hood was there. Loads and loads of cruisers and destroyers. You know, we had a big navy. You can imagine the Mediterranean fleet and the home fleet together, colossal. And we'd all do exercises for a while. We didn't really know what was going on because we were down below watch. It was only the big noises, like the captain and the commander and all those people who knew exactly what was going on. And I think that was the first time we practiced a broadside on the 15-inch. You know, while I was on it, anyway. I mean, I'm not saying they didn't do it years before. And it was quite comical in a way. We were all at action stations. And when they fired a 15-inch, and I was in the boiler room at the time, in one of the boiler rooms, and you never seen anything like it. There were nuts and bolts and dust and everything coming down from above, you see. You know, where the ship really, you could feel the ship sort of heave backwards and forwards. And this was just practicing. And, well, there you are. That's what happened. And the flames, flames in the furnaces, they sort of seemed to shoot out and back again. This is when they fired the big guns. And
could you hear it?
Oh, yes. But it wasn't, how can I put it? It was a sort of a dull noise because when you're right down below, down in the engine room, you can imagine you're in the depths of the ship, you see. But you could hear the noise. The only time we did fire them in anger later on, but we'll come to that in a minute.
And what else do you remember of the joint exercises?
Well, nothing special. We did full speed trials. They all did it. And as I say, our top speed was, if we were lucky, some of the comics would say, like 20 knots and an onion. In other words, we're supposed to do 22 knots, but we very rarely managed to get that far. That's with everything going out, all the sprayers on the boiler, all the boilers connected up, and all the lot. And a smooth sea and a following wind. We do about 22. But the hood could do 30 knots, you see, so the hood used to. And full speed, and then all sorts of other manoeuvres that we didn't know about, you know, the executive branch, the admirals and the captains, they were the ones who were organising all this, you see. And that was it. And then were there.
Did you get ashore at Gibraltar?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, you could get ashore. They'd come in, usually, if I remember rightly, we probably came in most evenings.
What was it like ashore?
Well, my memory, Gibraltar was very narrow. The main road was a very narrow road. And, of course, in those days, it was absolutely packed solid with sailors, you can imagine, you see. And, of course, a lot of them did drink a lot, Jolly Jack, you see. And there were plenty of, not pubs as we know it, but places where you could get drink all the way along the High Street and all the rest of it. And plenty of girls there, but funnily enough, they weren't, to my knowledge, they weren't really prostitutes, but they were enticing to drink more, you know, they come up and sit on your lap or something to get you to drink more, you see, and they got commission for doing this sort of thing, and this is how it went on for a while. And there was at least one club there, one naval club, and I think there was an army club as well, where, you know, the naval ratings were allowed to go in, etc., etc., etc. But I didn't go ashore all that much anyway. Just occasionally. And I don't think, in fact, I'm pretty certain that none of the six of us who joined, there were six of us, you know, told you, none of us drank very much, funnily enough. And I'd really, I can honestly state that I didn't really start drinking, what I call drinking, until I was about 27. I could, you know, I didn't like the taste, and I wish I hadn't started then, actually, but it's too late. But none of my chums were sort of what you call real boozers.
Did you have any special chums, or were they just the six of you?
Well, six of us, but I have one special one, and unfortunately he died about 10 years ago. But his widow now lives at Lee. She lives at Lee. They used to live in Norfolk. And he was in the same class as, well, obviously in the six of us, he was one. Now, when we were at the Fishguard, he was chummy with somebody else, really. But this other person, it was an electrical artificer. And so they, when we finished our training, they sort of split up. And then I chummed up with him, you see, mainly on the resolution. And that was it.
What was his name? And what?
Pepper, Charles Pepper. And he left, when his 12 years was finished, he left. He'd passed for warrant officer, but apparently, he told me this, and quite believe it, he wasn't married at the time, but he'd met the girl he was going to marry, and he decided he wasn't going to keep on in the Navy then, so despite the fact that he'd passed the examination from warrant engineer officer, they don't call it warrant officer now, but they did then, he didn't take it on, he left. So.
And what did you like about him so much? I mean, why did you pal so?
Well, I suppose because we'd been in the Fishguard together for, like, we talked the same language, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He didn't, funnily enough, he wasn't very good at sports. He wasn't a sporting man. But, we just got on well together, really. That was it. I can't think of anything, really.
Any other special pals?
On the resolution you're talking about now. Yeah, actually, well, there was one person who joined. He'd never been in the Fishguard. They had a system in those days where if people had done their training, engineering training, outside, providing they'd passed the test and done them long enough, etc., etc., then they could then join the Navy as either a fifth-class ERA or, depending on their age and qualifications, as a one grade up. And this chap was only about the same age as me. And he joined under those conditions, and his name was Wells, Reggie Wells. And he was a good footballer. Never quite got in the team that I did, but he liked playing football. And he was, I got quite pally with him, and I lost touch with him completely. And when I caught up again with Pepper, years, because we all disappeared after, but I managed to track him down, and I asked him if he ever knew where Reg Wells came from, and he said, well, he came from the London area, but I never managed, I went through the telephone directory, but I never managed to, I managed to track down quite a lot of people through in the library, through telephone directories and all sorts of other odds and ends, but I never managed to get him. So whether he's still around or not, I don't know.
Now, what about after Gibraltar? Anything else about Gibraltar before you leave there? You weren't there long, were you? It was just a cruise.
No. Now, at that particular time, I don't think there was anything else special about Gibraltar. We didn't play any... I don't think we played any football there, had any football matches. I can't remember. That was the special thing about it was, of course, if you were there and you were in the harbour, it was absolutely amazing to see all these battleships, crew. You never seen anything like it. You probably won't ever either. all in Gibraltar Harbour, little destroyers and all sorts. Anyway, that brings us up to, then you'd get back in time for Easter leave. And we'd go back to your home depot then, ours would Chatham, so it would be Sheerness where we would be, you see. So
back to Sheerness, right.
Back to Sheerness, Easter leave, and I'm just trying to think what happens. And I think things are beginning to get a bit serious again. And as a result of that, we all had summer leave was normally in July, in a bit of August, you know, it split. But that was pulled forward a month, I think, or more. And we were due to go, when you're in the home fleet, we were in what was called the home fleet at the time, and you used to visit different ports. And we visited them Aberystwyth in Wales, at one of the ports we called that. And then, while we were there, we were all called back to Sheerness, and they advanced the leave by a month. So this is obviously when things are beginning to get, you know, heading towards the crisis, you see. And then let's think, we had our leave. So that would take us to about end of July and August, and everybody's sort of getting on top. And then we went, if I remember correctly now, we went round to Portland. We were in Portland anyway, on September the 3rd, 1939, Sunday morning. Now I can picture the scene now, all in the mess, and the radio's on, and Chamberlain came over the air. And of course, it makes you realise how stupid young people are. Lots of the young ones, I don't think I did, but anyway, I'm not sort of making excuses, all cheered like mad when he announced that we were at war with Germany. And the older ones in the mess, people of 30 or over, looking all serious, and we couldn't. But it just shows you, young and stupid. Is that correct? We didn't realise what was going to happen, you see. Everybody thought, it'd be all over in a couple of months or something, and so forth. Anyway, we're in Portland then, and our first trip, when the actual war had started, we did a convoy across to Halifax, Nova Scotia, across, and we did.
Now, what do you remember of that?
Nothing special. We were watch keeping all the time, and so forth and so on. And I remember the second one, especially. We arrived in Halifax, I think it was sometime in November, and the snow ashore was about 6 feet deep, and the anchor cables were all frozen. They had to sort of keep chopping the frozen ice off the anchor cables. This is when we were getting towards Halifax. This was must have been the second one. If we did one in, let's see, the first one September, we'd have got over there and back. That's right, and then we're in for a while, and then back. That's right, that would have been about the November one. And I can remember that distinctly. Get up on the folks, it was all covered in ice, etc., etc. And we'd stay in Halifax 2 or 3 days.
And what were you convoying?
Ships. We didn't know, really. We didn't know what was on the ships, put it that way. But we're convoying merchant ships over, and apparently later on, I mean, whether this is true or not, we'd heard that some of them had gold bullion on board, but I don't know whether that's true or not. You probably know more about that.
And who else was on the escort?
I'm just trying, funny you should ask me that, because last night I was thinking, I thought to myself, now who was with us on this? Obviously we must have had some destroyers, because they're the sort of, in case of the U-boat attack. I got a feeling that there were a couple of cruisers. I think the York, the cruiser, was with us as well, but I wouldn't bet heavily on that. And to be quite honest, I don't really know. I'm guessing, assuming that there must have
been. Were there any attacks made on the convoy?
No. None there and none back. The thing that, one of the things that really, in a way, was quite ironic and really upset one of my chums, who's still alive, but he's still a bit iffy up here. In one of his speeches, the captain of the Resolution was telling us what a wonderful ship it was, and they normally do, you see, unsinkable practically in all this business, you know. In other words, trying to convince the ship's captain. Well, we didn't really believe it too much, especially when I think it was the day after he'd given this speech, the Royal Oak was sunk in Scapa Flow.
That was the same class, wasn't it?
Exactly the same, yeah. Anyway, as a result of that, one of the six chap by the name of Andrews, he's still alive, but he's in a sort of nursing home business in Portsmouth housing, and he started going a bit funny,
worrying.
Yeah. To make matters worse, from his point of view, before we left on that particular convoy, and we were in, where were we at the time? Plymouth, I think. I don't forget now. Anyway, he was expected to leave the ship, be drafted back to barracks, and his hammock, his gear was all ready to go, and at the last minute, his draft was stopped. Don't know why, but it was stopped, and he wanted to go. Of course, he was disappointed with that. And then when, as a result of that, a couple of days at sea, and we heard the Royal Oak was sunk, I think that really. Anyway, but we could sort of talk with him, Pepper and I, because we were. But most other people were a bit worried about him. And in the end, they took him. He had to go in the sick bay. And when we got back from this particular trip, he was off the ship and went in a hospital, you see.
What were his symptoms, if you see what I mean?
Well, how can I put it? He was agitated all the time. And when he was off watch, now one of the things I used to worry about when we were steaming along was if you made smoke. So if the fan revolutions in the boiler room weren't just right, if they were too fast, you could get white smoke, and if they were too slow, you'd get black smoke. And of course, if you made a lot of smoke, smoke could be sighted by. So naturally, the captain and so forth on the bridge, they didn't. Any time you made smoke, they'd ring down from the bridge to telegraph, stop making smoke. And then the engine room would ring through to the boiler room, stop making smoke, and then the chief stoker down there in charge would do something about it. See? Right, now that was one of the danger things. Now, this chap, well, he would threaten the chief stoker on watch, you see, in the boiler room. And he had a great big wheel spanner with him, he'd be threatened. But mind you, we weren't there, we just got this. We heard about it, you see. And eventually, as a result of this and all sorts of other peculiar things like this, he was taken into the sick bay. And eventually, when we got back into port, he was off and went to hospital.